I'm here with J.M. Fortier from Quatre Temps and author of the book The Market Gardener. Hi, J.M.
Hey, hi. All right, Mark.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. So you're somewhat well-known in the regenerative and market gardening world for your books, but for our listeners who aren't familiar with the regenerative or upstart farming scene, can you talk a little bit about yourself and your book and your farm?
Yeah, I farm in Quebec, Canada, and my wife and I started a market garden in 2003, and it was a 1.5-acre market garden where we developed whole sorts of really interesting systems, working with tools that were not familiar at the time, and we've been making a living on that farm ever since. So highly productive, doing CSA, doing farmers market, but all on small acreage using hand tools. And eventually I wrote a book about that called The Market Gardener, where I was describing all the tools and the techniques and the strategy of how to start a small organic farm. It became really popular, and it has led me to travel the world and teach workshops and meet a lot of people and influence a lot of things, I think. And eventually, one thing leading to the other, I was summoned, or I was asked if I would start a new farm in Quebec to train young people into this kind of farming. And so I started a farm in 2015 called Quatre Temps, La Ferme des Quatre Temps, where we took this model and added animals to the system, added a food lab to it, and it's just an amazing farm that was created with a lot of permaculture principles, and a lot of the whole concept was to showcase regenerative agriculture, how it could look like in the future. And so it's been a pretty big voyage for me here.
So for me as a beginning farmer, it's really intriguing, to the idea that you could make a living off of such a small plot of land. And I know that one of the techniques that you really espouse is no-till market gardening. What does no-till mean, and how is it different from, you know, your regular or more conventional vegetable grower?
Well, it's, you know, for anyone that has a garden out there, it's, you know, usually you'll take out that old rotor tiller and just work the garden and plant into that. And that was pretty much the go-to when I started. It was, you work your soils, you plow them, you disc them, or you rototill them, or you spade them, and then you create clean slate to work from. But, you know, I had studied ecology. I majored in ecology and environmental science when I was at university. And, you know, for me, I've always been really in tune with the fact that the ecology can do service for you, but the earthworm, to name him, for example, you know, he can do work a lot of your soils, but if you're plowing, if you're disking, if you're destroying his habitat every time, it's going to be hard for him to do his work. And so ever since we've started the farm, we were looking for ways to do this without disturbing the ecology of our soils. We use tools like broad forks, permanent beds, tarps to clear the beds from what was growing before, and all sorts of different strategies to do this. And going beyond no-till, because no-till is good, it's interesting, but what we're really aiming for is to work with living soils. So making sure that our soils are alive, in that both the microbial population and the fungi populations are there, developed, and that, you know, it's a habitat. And it's a biodiversity, and we want to enhance that as well as grow commercially onto there.
You use the term clean slate, and I think, you know, people really, when they think of farming and they think of long straight rows, people really like square, flat, beautiful, or something beautiful, but very orderly plots of land. But what are some of the consequences of all of that work that goes into that soil? How does that affect the soil and that soil biology to make it pleasing for the eye?
Yeah, for a lot of people, when they look at fields, what they like the smell and the view of brown fields, soil that has been worked. So there's nothing there. There's no grass. You know, there's no weeds. There's absolutely nothing. But that's like an open wound. When I look at that now with the insights that I have studying ecology, you know, working with applied soil all these years, I look at that and I don't think that's the way to do things, really, because like open soil is bare exposed and all of the microbial life, all of the fungi life gets destroyed when that happens, and then it needs to rebuild itself. So you're not counting on this, the microbial work to do all of this. And so, you know, clean slate for me is important, but it's how you get there. It's like, because it's a lot easier to plant into beds that are newly prepared, but can you prepare your beds without turning your soil over all the time? So that's where tarps and mulches become really handy. You know, anybody that has a home garden, if you leave straw or any, organic residue on the garden for a long time, and then you remove it, there's a lot of microbial life, there's a lot of earthworms, and then the soil is clean to plant into. So that's what we did, but on a bigger scale.
So what are some of the indicators that our listeners can look for in their soil to indicate whether their soil biology is healthy? Because things can be deceiving. If you till, because you're driving so much oxygen into the soil, you can actually drive up productivity for a short amount of time, but at the cost of your long-term ecological success. So, again, what are some things we can look for?
Well, I think you want to see that you have life in the soil. So earthworms are the ambassador, I think, for all the others. And so if there's a lot of earthworms in your garden or on your farm, then you're in business. And if you keep focusing on the earthworm, then you'll think of him when you work your gardens, and you're like, okay, is what I'm doing harming the earthworm? Am I building soil for it, or am I destroying? Am I rototilling and kind of destroying the habitat? So you kind of think about him, and then you might go as far as, when we use tarp, it's black and it's moist, so that it's tricking him that it's nighttime. So he's coming up at the top of the soil, taking the organic matter, bringing it down. And so, all these strategies, it's like you need to think like an earthworm and perhaps start to feed them. And then you can ask yourself, okay, what are earthworms, what do they eat? What are their food? And the prime food of earthworms is compost. So if you feed your soil compost and you leave it on top, that's doing a lot of good for the soil and for the earthworms. So I would say earthworms for sure.
When you pick up a shovel of soil and you see a handful of earthworms in it, you know you're in business.
For sure, for sure.
As you just mentioned compost as inputs. What are, if you add soluble fertilizer, and again, really drive your yields in the short term, what are the inputs that you use on the farm for soil amendments? And also, what is the appropriate kinds of technology that you use? And you mentioned tarps, certain hand tools.
Broad forks.
What are the key technological pieces that allow you to put this into practice?
Yeah, so definitely, what we do is it's kind of mimicking, it's market gardening, so it's both. Okay, so we're doing gardening, but we're doing this very professionally. We fertilize the crops and we amend the soil with compost, but we also use different amendments like alfalfa meal. We'll also use chicken manure or, crab meal, fish meal, whatever. And we're using doses where we balance what the plant requirements are with what's available in our soils, because we do soil tests. So, we're not blindfolded fertilizing. We're doing it, I would say, more professionally. Then we operate on a permanent bed setup. So we don't need to be tilling, disking, making soil, shaping soil every year because the beds are permanent. Then we broad fork, which is a big fork that you plant into the ground. And then by the rowing motion, it opens up the bottom, but it doesn't invert the layers. So it's really a way to make sure that your soil is loose and deep without disturbing the ecology. And then we'll use tools like a BCS, walk-behind tractor, or two-wheel tractor, with implements that go on the back that replace the rotor tiller, like power harrows, flail mowers, or rotor tillers that have, rollers in the back to shallowly work the soil. And so that's our end game, is to work the top inch to prepare seed beds, in which we then seed with, cedars or transplant into. All of our plants are started in nurseries. And then it's all about going through cycles of replacing what's being grown by something else, because we're bringing it to market twice a week, to farmers market or to CSA. And so it's a very dynamic, process. We're always planting new things. We're always harvesting. And we're always preparing new beds every week for about 20, 25 weeks in the season.
So does that mean that you get a vacation?
Oh, you get winters off. That's the beauty of living in the Northeast. And yeah, winter for us is a time to rest, to prepare for the next season, to read, to regenerate ourselves. We're talking about regenerative agriculture. We need to regenerate ourselves. And also to plan. So a lot of what we do is crop planning and making sure that everything is ready for when the seasons start. Because when it starts, it's like a marathon. It just doesn't end until December. So December, January, February is time off.
When you do your thinking, and then when it's grow time, you just go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So last two questions, and they're kind of connected. What's your favorite thing to grow? And what is your favorite thing that you grow to eat? What's your favorite thing to eat from your farm?
Okay, so favorite thing to eat for me is salad mix. Like I've been growing, we grow about 6 different heads of salads that we cut and then we mix together with arugula, with baby kale, with baby spinach, with baby chard. We have, you know, all a beautiful mix, and then we wash it and it's packed, ready to eat. And, you know, I'm like a cow. I eat a lot of that every day. And so I'm excited about salad mix. We call it mesclun. It's more appropriate than salad mix. And the thing that I really like to grow on my farm, it's actually not vegetables. I like to grow farmers. So I train and teach young people to have the techniques and the strategies to be successful in farming. And that's what I really like. So I see them growing personally, individually. I see them learning this and then going on their own. And I'm really proud of that. And that's my favorite part of the farm, is just bringing them along and you know, showing them how to do this.
So for any listeners out there who are interested, who are budding farmers, interested in learning more, what's the best way for them to find you online or learn more about your techniques?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. It's themarketgardener.com. And you'll find me there. My book is called The Market Gardener. I have a YouTube channel, and there's a lot of information about my work. There's a lot of videos. I also teach an online course to growers from 55 different countries. So it's a really international course. And it's, again, it's all about getting more professional, showing the strategies, the techniques to make a living growing vegetables. And so it's accessible, and it's possible to do it. And we're living proof of that.
Well, thank you for leading the charge. And thank you so much for joining us.
It's a great pleasure, Mark. All right.